Just get myself organized. Well, we've already given you something to think about. Actually, before I start off, I should pray, shouldn't I? No, Matt's prayed. I don't need to pray again. Here's not a question so much as a rhetorical statement. I don't know how many of you have heard of Soul Survivor. One or two. Hanneke and I were at a Soul Survivor conference called Naturally Supernatural in the summer. And Andy Croft, who's one of the leaders, they've got funny titles. They're kind of joint senior pastors. He's joint senior pastor with Mike Pilavachi of Soul Survivor Church in Watford. And one of his evening talks was about friendship. And he took his message in large part from the book of Ruth. So I was listening and I got my notebook out and I started scribbling away furiously because I thought, now I've got some good material for my sermon in September. And he, fairly early on, he said when he read the book of Ruth, he thought, he used to be inspired by the story and think, you know, it would be great having a friend like Ruth. And then, as he reflected on it further, he realized it's more about being a friend like Ruth. So that's one of the things I want to bring into this morning's talk. First, a bit of background to the story of Ruth. And if you've got a Bible or your e-Bible, I'm going to focus on what we've had read, but I will be taking a look at the rest of the story. So you might like to have it open, or you might like just to take 10, 15 minutes this afternoon and sit down and read the whole story, the whole four chapters. Shouldn't take you more than about 5 minutes, actually. First, a bit of background. My dear friend Matt kindly passed on to me his slide from last week. Nice summary of the genealogy of Jesus, because after all, we are still in our story of women in the messianic line. And we've had 2 weeks ago the story of Tamar. Last week, the story of Rahab, who turns out is the mother of one of the lead characters in today's story. And then we have born of Boaz, we have Obed, whose mother was Ruth. And so, where does Ruth sit in the messianic line? She's the great-grandmother of King David, who was therefore 1/8 Moabite. The second background point is to say something to you about the names in the story. In the Bible, names are important and they reflect character. And it was thought also that if you knew somebody's true name, it gave you some kind of power over them. I mean, in a sense, we experience this on a daily basis. If I would suddenly shout, Matt, he sits up and pays attention. So that I have, in that sense, a little bit of power over Matt. So, which was why in the Israelite culture, the name of God was not pronounced. It was regarded as too sacred, and in any way, it's an impossibility to have power over God. So his name was represented by four letters, and I won't try and give them their Hebrew names, but in our language, YHWH or VH, and always appears in our Bibles as the Lord. So most of the times in the book of Ruth, you will see the Lord in capital letters appearing as the name of God. Occasionally, one of the other Hebrew words for God appears in the passage, and then it just appears as the name of God or the Lord of hosts or something like that, the God of Israel. But there are three important names in this story. I mean, if we were making a Hollywood movie and these were the actors, we would say that it's starring Ruth and co-starring Naomi and Boaz. So to start off with Naomi, the name apparently, the footnote in the NIV says that the name means pleasant, but the commentaries that I looked at said it's more my sweet one, which contrasts very much with how she renames herself at the end of the chapter. Don't call me, just two verses after where our reading stopped, don't call me Naomi, she said, call me Mara, which means bitter. So she'd gone from being sweet to being bitter. The name Boaz means in him is strength. So Boaz is a strong man, or is strong in the Lord, perhaps. And then Ruth, well, the commentaries come up with two derivations for the name, which would give us two meanings. One of the meanings would translate into English as friend or companion. And the other name would translate in, the other derivation would lead us to a meaning of vision of beauty. And it's uncertain which. Well, you might have already guessed, I'm going with friend. But I think for Boaz it was vision of beauty. So I'm going to take us through the story a little bit, particularly a retelling of chapter 1 in maybe more modern language. But firstly, just to know where we are in the story. Unfortunately, the clicker's at the back, so I can't use the little laser pointer. But you can see on the left, we've got Judah, and Bethlehem is sort of top left. And then on the right, we have Moab, with the Dead Sea in between. And I hope you can see that there is a sort of reddish-brown line joining Bethlehem with Moab, which indicates the route that Elimelech and his family would have taken at the beginning, and presumably Naomi and Ruth took on the way back. So let's reflect on what we've heard read, and then, as I say, I'll summarize the other three chapters of the story. And just think how contemporary this is. In a time of economic hardship, a man migrates from his home to a neighboring country in search of a better life. He takes his wife and two young sons with him. About the time the boys were grown up, their father died. They married local girls, but then they died too. And this left their mother, a bitter woman in her 40s, which was old by the standards of the day, with two widowed daughters-in-law in their early 20s and rather poor prospects in her host country. Fortunately, there has been an economic upturn in her country of origin, so she decided to go back. As she prepared to set off, she advised her daughters-in-law to go home to their mothers and start the quest for a new husband. "No," they said, "we're coming with you." "Don't be daft," she replied, "you've got no prospects with me." At which one of the two said, "Goodbye." But the other said, "I'm sticking with you. I'm joining your people and your faith. I'm following your God. Not even death will separate us." I couldn't help thinking of the verse in Proverbs 18, verse 24. It says, "There is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." And that was Ruth's determination in respect of Naomi. Now, as I say, this describes a very contemporary experience for some, though in some ways, Elimelech and family had it easy. There were no razor wire fences or concrete walls to be overcome, and no detention camps for refugees. So, how does the story continue? They return home to Bethlehem, where Naomi has property through her dead husband Elimelech. So somebody presumably has taken over his fields, or they're just lying fallow and growing wild. Who knows? They go back home because there at least she's got some property that she can use as a basis for her future well-being. In the meantime, it's barley harvest, and if you know well your books of the law, I think Deuteronomy describes it in some detail about the rights of the gleaner, and certainly Leviticus says you don't reap to the corners of your field and you don't go back, you leave the gleanings for the poor, the widow, the orphan, and the foreigner, the refugee. So Ruth says to Naomi, because she's actually under her mother-in-law's authority, "Please, Mum, can I go and glean in the fields? We've got to eat somehow." So she does. By coincidence, she happens to go and glean in the fields belonging to Boaz. So they meet in the harvest fields, and Boaz basically says to her, "Carry on gleaning in my fields through the barley harvest and through the wheat harvest that followed it." Apparently, that happens in April and May in the country of Israel, or it did in those days. And she's under Boaz's protection. Now, actually, Boaz is also from the same clan, so presumably, although it's told in the story as if it's a little bit, he didn't know who Ruth was, he is kin of Naomi's dead husband. And so when he finds out who this young woman is who's gleaning in his fields, actually family clan loyalty kicks in, and he starts looking after her in a distant sort of way. Now, after the harvest is completed and it's time for threshing out the grain and the harvest festival, they parted at the end of the harvest, and it's still a tradition today. In the meantime, Naomi has been thinking about the situation, the need to actually get her property redeemed so that she's got some economic benefit from it, and also the need to try and find a new husband for Ruth. And there was a thing called the Levirate Law, which meant that, in fact, as we you probably had it 2 weeks ago in the story of Tamar, I wasn't here for that, where if a young woman was left a widow and childless, then it was custom for a brother or a close male relative to marry her, and then the first child from their union wouldn't belong to him, but it would belong to the dead brother or the dead relative. So it would be the descendant, the heir. So in this case, as we'll come to later in the story, when Obed is born, he is technically the heir of, make sure I get the right name, the heir of Mahlon. Anyway, so Naomi basically says, go out to the threshing floor when the party's over, find out where Boaz is, uncover his feet. He would basically sleep on the ground under his cloak, uncover his feet and lie down there. And so she does. This isn't quite as scandalous as it might appear to us, because in a sense, she had a right to claim protection from this man, but she had to make sure she was claiming protection from the right man. Anyway, so she lays down at his feet. He wakes up in the middle of the night. What's this at my feet? What's this woman doing here? Who are you? Anyway, and so she says, I'm your kinsman Ruth. I'm your servant Ruth, sorry. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. Now that spreading your garment over me, when a man spreads his garment over a woman in that culture, that was effectively an offer of marriage. It was a gesture that implied that that was going to happen. And so he says, Boaz says to her, okay, well, stay here, but make sure you go away before it's full daylight, so nobody knows that there's been a woman here. I think that in those days, the harvest festival was a men-only party. Anyway, so she went back and told Naomi what had happened, and he'd basically said to her, you know, I am a kinsman redeemer, but there's another guy who's actually closer to you in the clan family tree. So I have to check with him. If he wants to redeem you, then he's got first right. If he doesn't, then I will do it. And I'll sort it out today, he says. So the end of the story is that he goes to the town gate, city gate, which was where business was transacted, where the town council met. Basically, you get a dozen guys together, and you've got, a dozen people. So he summons 10 of the elders of the town, and he also gets the kinsman redeemer to come and sit down, and then he says, this is the story. You've got first right to redeem. If you're not going to redeem the land, then I will. And the man says, yeah, nice piece of land, I'll have that. And then Boaz says, but with the land, you get Ruth the Moabitess. And he wasn't so keen on that. So he says, no thanks, you can redeem. So Boaz does. And so there are two important concepts running through this story, two important Hebrew words. The first one is the concept of redeeming, which, if you like to get know these words, is apparently Goel. And that implies the concept of the kinsman redeemer, as I say, the male relative who had the responsibility to take over his brother's widow. And it's also the phrase that's used as the avenger of blood if a family member is murdered. So there's a lot in the concept of redeeming, which, funnily enough, carries forward into redemption in the New Testament. The other important word is chesed, which is translated as kindness, but again, it's got more nuances to that. Frequently, especially in the Psalms, it's translated loving kindness, but it has implications of selfless love, loyalty, and mercy. So if you do read the story again, look for the words kindness and redeemer, and think of these. Now, coming to the core, Ruth as a friend, as an example for us to become a friend like Ruth. Could have put this one up sooner. I've mentioned kindness. I've mentioned the Redeemer. Ruth as a friend. Ruth chose to commit to Naomi when she could have said goodbye. I will go with you, stay with you, join your people, worship your God, share your tomb. Her chesed stimulated chesed in others. Boaz, throughout the rest of the story, shows kindness to Ruth even before the sort of the family situation is sorted out. And in a way, Naomi also shows kindness in saying, you know, we've got to get this sorted out. We've got to get you settled. You haven't got to be left hanging around. And this all occurs under the overarching kindness, chesed, of God. In a sense, we see Boaz as the Goel. He goes from showing kindness to the extra mile of acting as kinsman redeemer. He makes a point of tracking down the closer relative and settling the matter promptly. And in response, the witnesses invoke God's blessing, particularly on Ruth, but also on Boaz. And God indeed blessed them, and indirectly Naomi, with the birth of Obed, David's grandfather. We don't know if Ruth had other children, maybe she did, but Obed is the important one. Our other reading from Romans, Paul is reminding us that basically Jesus promises to stick to us even closer than Ruth promised to stick to Naomi. Jesus is our faithful friend and in all senses of the word, he's our Goel, he's our Redeemer. So how do we respond? I want to share a few of my notes from Andy Croft. Andy Croft, quoting C.S. Lewis, reminded us, friendship is not about face-to-face. You know, when you're friends, you're not like lovers staring into each other's eyes all the time. It's side-by-side doing stuff together, which is a problem if you have nothing in common, nothing to talk about. You discover friendships. C.S. Lewis uses examples, you know, it might just be about collecting stamps or learning all the Harry Potter trivia you can, or old railway engines, that's a man thing. If you have shared interests and a shared relationship with Jesus, it's even better. Well, for Ruth and Naomi, The shared interest, sadly, was a shared experience of widowhood, bereavement, and alienation from the local culture. Naomi was an economic refugee and a foreigner. Ruth, someone who'd married out of her tribe and her clan and no longer fit in. For many of us as expatriates or raised as third culture kids, that last thing of not actually fitting in anywhere might be enough common ground, especially as we live in a culture that is increasingly hostile to faith in general and Christianity in particular. Well, a couple more Andy Croft quotes on friendship, which we can try and do something with. He suggested three attributes about of friends. Firstly, friends stay. They stick with you. True friends walk in when everyone else is walking out. Show commitment. And it's the Bible word, covenant. Covenant makes it okay to admit that it's not okay. A true friend is someone you can be vulnerable with. And in a sense, it calls us to love in the way that Jesus loved. Love one another as he loved us. Second call is to forgive one another. And a third thing is, if you're a true friend, you earn the right to speak the truth to one another. And actually, it's a hard thing to learn to speak the truth when you rather keep your mouth shut. Proverbs 27:6 is relevant here, which says, "Better is an open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend." And it's a mutual thing. It's, if you like, it's the knife that cuts both ways. And ultimately, if you're going to be a friend in the way that Ruth is a friend, it's not, "I'm going to love you how you love me," but "I'm going to love you the way that he, Jesus, loved me and loves me." And Andy's conclusion, which I think is pretty useful for us too, is that we can't love our enemies if we can't love our friends. So if we can learn to be friends like Ruth, we can share Christ's love with a lonely world. So my prayer for us today is that we can learn from the example of Ruth and of Jesus how to be faithful friends in times of need. Amen.